Welcome to Reflections and Wonders, Revisiting Luke's Gospel, a podcast that's just me wondering off the top of my head about Luke's Gospel for the second time in 3 years. My name is Norm Seeley, and I'm a minister at Jubilee United Church in Toronto, Canada. I've been a minister for over 30 years, and every year my thoughts and wonderings change. So, Monday to Friday, I'll be reading my way through Luke, even though I read through Luke in 2021. But the thing is, the world's changed. I've changed, and so I expect that my wonderings will have changed as well. I don't have notes, and I haven't checked back to see what I said 3 years ago, but I am kind of looking forward to hearing what I say now. Or more importantly, what I think God may be saying to me now. I do want to thank Drew Winters for the music and you for joining me. I will do my best to keep my wanderings between 18 and 30 minutes, but every once in a while we may go a couple minutes long. You should also know that this is an audio version of a video blog that I will have recorded 2 weeks ago. So, if you want to see what I look like when I'm wandering, well, you can find me on my YouTube channel. Just search Norm Seeley. That's Norm Seeley, S-E-L-I. Or even easier, find me on the Jubilee United Church website, www.jubileeunited.ca. And if you want to support this and other digital ministries of Jubilee United Church, well, you can make a donation through canadahelps.org. We are Jubilee United Church, the one in Ontario. So now, let's see what Luke has to say this time around. And today it's Luke chapter 9, verses 28 to 36. Yesterday, and actually in the day before, Jesus asked the disciples, a whole bunch of them, who do people say that I am? Like, what are they saying about me? And they shared, and then he said, and who do you say that I am? And when Peter got it right and said, you are the Messiah of God, Jesus told Peter to, quiet, don't tell anyone. And then went on to talk about picking up your cross to follow him and the foolishness of gaining the whole world but losing yourself, all of that stuff. And I wondered a little bit about why Peter couldn't tell anybody. And then about the other stuff too. So now we move on to this. That's it. Yeah. So here we go. So here it is. It's Luke chapter 9, verses 28 to 36. Now, about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. While he was praying, the appearance of his face changed and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. And just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah, not knowing what he said. And while he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him. When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone. And they kept silent and in those days told no one any of the things that they had seen. There you go. It's the Transfiguration story, right? Jesus gets all glowy white. It's told in other Gospels. Mark, Matthew, they tell the story. And I think they tell it differently. Now, there's a part of me that wants to go and check right now because I didn't. I mean, I don't prep for this. I read and I just think, but there's a piece of, well, trust me, later today I will be looking it up just to compare them and see, because maybe it's just the way that I learned the story when I was a kid and it sort of sticks there in my head, but I'm pretty sure the other Gospels, well, in this Gospel, it seems to me like Peter, James, and John did not know what they were getting into. Now, I know they, how could you be ready for the Transfiguration? If Jesus said, hey, come up with me on a mountain and I'm going to get all glowy and you're going to see Elijah and Moses, That still won't prepare you for what happened. But it seems to me that Jesus just said to Peter, James, and John, I'm going to pray. Come with me. Let's just get away from all of this for a bit. And so they went off to pray. And then this transfiguration happened. They didn't expect it, but I also wonder whether Jesus expected it, whether Jesus knew this was going to happen. It just seems that Jesus could have given them a little more. You know, it's like, guys, come up to the mountain. There's something I need to show you. Something important is going to happen. I always get the feeling from the other gospels that there's a sense of that. But here, I don't know, today it just feels like they didn't see this coming, and I don't know that Jesus did either. And I tell you, as I'm reading this now, and this is, I've never really, I don't think I haven't preached it this way. I don't know if I've ever thought about it this way, but in this telling alone, just in Luke's telling of it, I'm beginning to wonder whether this is, whether this might be a vision that Peter has when he's praying. I don't know that John and James had it. I mean, it says they kept silent in those days and told no one of the things they had seen, they, plural. But if Peter was the one telling the story to Luke, or to somebody who told it to Luke, he would have said, yeah, we didn't tell anybody. Not aware that James and John, they didn't see anything. They had no idea. They didn't know what Peter saw. Now, maybe it was a shared vision, but I mean, I'll tell you why I think that this could conceivably be a vision by Peter. Part of it's in the text, and part of it's in what we've read before. So in the text, like I said, it seems like nobody saw this coming. Jesus didn't warn them a big thing was going to happen. Just said this thing's going to happen. Just said, no, come, let's go and pray. And while they were praying, it happened. So could be happening to Peter and not happening to anybody else. In the story, we hear Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep. But since they stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. So that sense of being heavy with sleep, but not being asleep. Being asleep, but being awake, but not really sure. I wonder whether Peter actually is awake at all or whether he's having a vision. I have had sweat lodge experiences of visions, not as vibrant as this. But I do know people who do. I know a number of people who see things that the rest of us don't. And you know, it could happen to sweat lodge. It can happen with the use of psychedelic drugs. Natural psychedelics do that. But also people who do it with breathing, and therefore it can become part of a prayer ritual. So there's all sorts of ways to have visions. Visions are not peculiar. It's just that Luke hasn't called this a vision, but the way it's described. And I mean, I've mentioned this before. I know when, or I've talked about when I've preached it in the Transfiguration. It always seems odd to me that Peter or whoever that the author of the gospel, therefore those who are there, recognize Moses and Elijah. How the heck would you know who Moses and Elijah are in terms of fit? I mean, oh look, there's two old Jewish guys with beards. We've never seen them before. Like, how do you know that that guy is Moses and that guy's Elijah? But Peter, or whoever's having this vision, knows. So that's how visions work. You know, you just know, but it doesn't mean that anybody else can see what you see. And the fact that they're talking about Jesus's departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem, is the way it's put in the gospel. So they are talking about his death that is to come. Right, which is a sticking point for Peter. Let's think back, you know, a few days when Jesus talks about how he has to suffer. Peter says, rebukes him. Don't talk about that. Don't talk about that, please. And Jesus says, "Get you behind me, Satan." You know that whole thing. He gets so So Peter has trouble with that, but now he's having a vision where Elijah and Moses. So let's understand, that is the foundation of his faith, the lawgiver, the prophet, all there they are. And so this idea that Jesus has to suffer and die is verified by the giants of his faith. So this is God's will. This is God's plan. Now Peter gets that. The other piece that seems very vision-like to me is that then they become overshadowed by a cloud. And again, within that cloud, he hears, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." He hears the voice of God. Boy, a cloud sounds like a vision, doesn't it? I don't know if you've ever had a vision, or just, you know, that when you're waking up on a Saturday morning, you're not awake, but you're kind of awake, but everything just seems sort of foggy, cloudy. It's not an unpleasant state. And it's a way to describe a vision. Now, I the majority of people wouldn't agree with me on this, and I'm not saying that this is what's happened. I'm just saying that as I'm reading Luke now, I wonder about it. I'm wondering if this is a vision that Peter's having. For all I know, Jesus, James, and John are just praying. They're just quietly there praying. And what's going on in Peter's mind, in Peter's brain, in Peter's experience is this incredible vision. Now, why? So let me roll back a little bit. 2 days ago, when Jesus asked the crowd, "Who do you say that I am?" And when he said, and when he asked, "Who do you say that I am?" And Peter responded by saying, "You are the Messiah of God," which is the right answer. And Jesus goes, "Don't tell anyone." And I wondered then, as I wondered to this day, why? Why can't you tell anybody? And now, part of what I shared about that yesterday was this idea of not accepting something on authority, but experientially coming to this understanding yourself, so that it's you, it transforms you, becomes part of your identity. It's your learning, your transformation. So you need to own it. In seminary, I was a good student. I'm not the best student, maybe, but I was a good student. Wrote theology exams, as one would. I could describe quite well the Trinity. I can think of an exam when I would have done that. Describe the Trinity, the history of the Trinity, how it came to be, the problems that they'd had with the Trinity, and I could have easily, you know, talked about same substance, similar substance, and what it all means historically, and Trinitarian expressions and all of that. Could have done all of that stuff. I'm not sure that when I was in seminary that I believed the Trinity. I mean, I did intellectually, I did theologically. Yes, it makes sense. It's a good construct. Thank goodness that they came up with it. But it would become much later that the Trinity would be a way that I could actually express my faith in God, my understanding of who Jesus is in relationship to God, to express what it means to be spirit-filled, to feel the presence of the Spirit. Those things now are very important to me. They help me access God. They help me grow in relationship to God. I believe, personally, I believe in the Trinity. It's very powerful for me. Doesn't mean you have to. Doesn't mean I, you know, can't work with or love or admire those who don't share that same conviction. But I do. It's mine. I went from the words, and I knew the words, but eventually they're mine. And it's now formative to my faith. So Jesus asked a question and Peter answered it, said, "You're the Messiah of God," because Peter's good at exams. Peter had been studying and listening. He knew what to say. Did he believe it? Did he know what it meant? Peter struggles with the idea of Jesus suffering and dying. And so I don't know if he got it yet. And so when Jesus says, "Tell no one," everybody hears it. Everybody knows to shut up about it. But he's talking mostly to Peter. Tell no one. Because if Peter's anything like me, as soon as you tell me not to say something, oh God, I want to say something. I want to say something a lot. I want to go and tell people about it, but I'm not going to. And so I keep it front and center in my mind. So I make sure I don't slip up and tell someone because Jesus told me not to. It's kind of like saying, don't think of pink elephants. You can't stop thinking about pink elephants. Well, psst, tell no one. Oh my God. Damn. And it's clear here. About 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John and went up the mountain to pray. About 8 days. So for a week and change, Peter has been working pretty hard at not telling anyone. But he's been thinking about it. He's been thinking about it a lot, and he's been dreaming about it. And it's there. And he's been struggling with it, and he's been trying to make sense of it. He didn't like it when Jesus told him to get behind me, Satan. That we had to deal with suffering and dying. He didn't like any of that, but he's working hard at that and trying to bring that together with his faith. That's Moses and Elijah and all of this and how it all works out. And then in a moment of prayer, click, it now makes sense. He has this vision and he sees it now. There it is. Jesus is with Moses and Elijah. Jesus fulfills the law and embodies the prophets. Jesus is the natural extension of this faith that has been Peter's his whole life. So as a faithful first century Jew, but now, it makes sense now. It took him about 8 days of thinking about it and growing in it, and so now it makes sense. He has a vision where it all coalesces now, and it makes sense to him, and it's powerful. He was given the time to make it his own. Like I said, I'm not saying you have to read it that way, but for some reason today, reading Luke's story of the Transfiguration, that clicks, that makes connection in my head, And it invites me to be patient with people who don't get it. People who say all the right words, and then you watch them and their actions betray those words. You go, what a hypocrite. But maybe the person's not hypocritical as much as they're trying to grow into the words. Makes me patient with myself. And I look back and think, yes, I did very well on my exam, but I didn't really believe the Trinity. I could explain it. But I couldn't, my life wasn't invested in it. C.S. Lewis, probably in Mere Christianity, that'd be the book he'd do it in. I remember just C.S. Lewis referring to faith as a rope or a cord, you know, tied around some books. Your faith is this cord tied around some books. When it's tied around some books, it doesn't matter that much. But when you're hanging from that same cord over the edge of a cliff, when your life depends on it, that's when you discover what your faith really is. That's when you discover how strong your faith really is and how important your faith really is. Well, in seminary, I had my faith wrapped around a bunch of books. I got it, and it was fine. I got it. It was great. It was great. But I out in the world, and as I go through my life, and I experience things, and I pray, and I live, and I contemplate, and I wonder, and I dream, and all of these things, and then suddenly I find myself not in peril, but I'm hanging from a cliff now, hanging onto that rope, because now I know it. Okay, now I get what my faith is. I get it now. It's this cord. It's this rope. And it is strong and life-giving, and it gives me comfort, and it gives me hope, and all of those things that before, when I could explain it, that was fine. But now it is meaningful to me. If you think about it, that's very much the history of our church, or of a lot of churches. Come, learn the words, and then in faith grow into the words. The sad thing is sometimes we learn the words, but we never actually grow into them. My faith community is not one that recites creeds particularly, or very often, but I have been parts of those communities and we'll go to gatherings where, like, the first thing we do is, like, we'll recite the Apostles' Creed or the Nicene Creed, even the Apostles usually. I believe one God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, creator of all things visible and invisible. And we do all of those things. And we say the words. Really? Are we thinking about it? Do we believe creator of all things visible and invisible? Do we believe all those words that we say? the Lord's Prayer. Do we believe all those words that we say, or do we just say them? Because I can remember being taught those words as a kid. Trespass, forgive. I didn't know what that meant particularly as a kid. Daily bread. I don't know. I like pudding. I have whatever mom gave me. You know, those words didn't mean anything to me, but I was taught those words and I could recite them. And then as I grew in my faith, those words began to have meaning. The Apostles' Creed has meaning. The New Creed of the United Church of Canada, we call it new. It was 1965. It's almost as old as I am. But it has, those words are very powerful for me. I knew them before I appreciated them, but I have grown to appreciate those words. And that's kind of the way we do things in church. And I would say that was the way that things were done in first century Jewish Jerusalem, right? You want to be an observant Jew in the first century in Jerusalem, you read the Torah, you knew your mitzvahs, you knew the law, right? And then you lived the customs, and as you did that, you knew all the rules, and then you made sense of the world because you knew the rules, right? And that to me is sort of what Luke's telling us about here. Peter knew the words, knew the answer to the question, but didn't really get it yet. But then in time, he came to get it. I am aware that there are lots of communities who do it the other way around. It's not memorize the words and then they'll have meaning to you. It's like, you know what? Come and be with us. Do what we do. Just do what we do, and it'll come to make sense. Jesus sort of does that, right? When Jesus says things like, what shall it profit to gain the whole world but lose yourself? And you go like, well, gaining the whole world sounds pretty cool, Jesus. Actually, you know, having all the stuff, that'd be pretty cool. And it's hard for Jesus to say, okay, listen, I know you think that, but not really. And if you could learn to let go of that ambition, that idea that having all the stuff would make you happy, you will actually be much happier. If you could learn to offer your life, you would actually then discover a fuller, real life. By literally giving your life, you'll get a better life. Really, Jesus? That doesn't make any sense. Jesus, I know, but come and do what I do. You don't have to know the words. Just come and live the way I live. Do what I do, and you will get it. So there's this idea that you will get it, whether it's learn the words and you'll get it, or do the things and you'll get it. The thing is that the fuller understanding comes later. We learn to do, we learn the words. But just knowing the words or doing the things isn't the whole story. You got to give it time. Peter needed about 8 days for his words to make sense to him. Some of us need about 40 years for things to make sense. Some of us need 4 hours. But the thing is, most of us need a little bit of time. It's not like a light switch. It's like, oh, boom, I get it. I heard those words and now I got it. I did that dance step and suddenly the whole thing makes sense to me now. It's not like that. It takes time. And that's part of what we get to do in prayer, is to reflect on those things. And I think that's why Jesus says to Peter, don't tell anyone, because you're not ready to tell anyone yet. Right? You don't get it yet. It isn't really life-giving to you yet. But if you'll just work on it yourself, then you're going to get it. And when you get it, then you're able to share it. I don't think I would have been a good minister the day that I walked out of my theology exam and got a good mark because I could explain the Trinity and a whole bunch of other lovely things. I think I have become a good minister over time as those words have come to matter to me. Not as an answer to a quiz, but as something that upon which my life relies, something that shapes my life. I think that's what's going on in this story, frankly, is that we're witnessing that moment when Peter gets it. And Jesus isn't just the answer to a question, but actually shapes Peter's life. I think. I don't know. I'm going to leave it with you to wonder about. As I say, that's one way of reading the story. It's certainly not the majority way, may not be the right way, but it is the way for me right now. So let me offer a prayer. Loving God, thank you. Thank you for stories and imagination. Thank you for scripture and wondering. Thank you for these moments when the stories not only come alive, but allow us to hear your voice, your call in the words. God, as we hear you, let us be drawn to you. Let us follow you, and let us grow in faith. We pray in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, through the Holy Spirit. Amen. So there we go. That's enough of me. I got a big day in front of me, and I suspect you do too. So I wish you your best with your day. Please know that when I say God bless you, I mean it. And I mean in that blessing that God sees you and loves you exactly where you are and as you are. But that God's love doesn't just come to meet you, but God's love moves through you into the world, touching the people in your lives, making a difference in that, changing the world. You are a conduit for God's love, whether you know it or not. You matter. So thank you for sharing that love and changing the world. God bless you. And I hope to see you tomorrow. Be well.